Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in since they going back to showing action tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the anime action fan sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
Let's take the soul records off the shelf. I try to listen to them by myself. Today's music ain't got the same soul. I love that old time rock and roll. Now don't try to take me to a disco. You won't even get me out on the floor. In 10 minutes I'll be late for the door. I love that old time rock and roll. I like that old time rock and roll. That kind of music just soothes the soul. I reminisce about the days of old, with that old time rock and roll.
Pop, 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 pop. Oh, 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 oh! My Toonami generation did not see you there in the figurative screen as I break the fourth wall. It was a joke, but never mind. I am your primetime host, Thomas Primetime Madness, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative right here on the Absolution Network, representing the Toonami generation. This is episode 46, and I apologize, but I'm a bit of an old school mood right now. I've been singing a lot of old school songs, and, you know, I grew up, you know, old time rock and roll, Bob Seger for one. Billy Joel, oh, for the longest time, whoa, for the longest, if you said goodbye to me tonight, ooh. So yeah, I've been in a sort of old school musical, you know, media type of mood, reading some old books and everything, and probably a lot has to do with this week's review. This week, we will be reviewing the very first series of Lupin the Third, which hails from the 1960s. I mean, you know, a lot of this goes into, again, my whole theory of animation categorization, as far as the evolution of anime, that is. Because this is where we do first get to see anime make that jump from what that first generation was, which really, when you look at that first generation of so-called Japanese animation, or as its own first generation of anime, it really is more of the cartoon style. Here's where we see that jump, that influence from a Walt Disney Sleeping Beauty as far as that art style and things like Lupin the Third, like Battle for the Planets, like Space Battleship Yamato, and among other things. But like I said, here in Lupin the Third, we see it in that this first series that's in the 1960s. I recently found this on Hulu, which is where I watched it, and it's subtitled. So this is not a English voice cast at Funimation. I apologize, Funimation. I don't mean to call you dumb, but that Funimation or Genion is done. Though the second part is on there with an English dub cast, which is awesome. I think most anime fans, because I don't know if many people outside the anime community probably know of Lupin the Third, which I think is really, really sad. I think most anime fans know of Lupin the Third because of it being on Adult Swim, which was the second series, also effectively known as the Redcoat series. The very first series, which is about 23 episodes, though I think the first episode is not shown in part of a movie called Secret Files that Funimation released, but the very first episode, I don't know why I was going back to the first episode. I apologize. I lost my train of thought. But, no, it is 23 episodes. And it follows... I don't want to give the plot now, but it's a very simple plot. It follows Lupin the Third. The second series does, and the third series. This is an anime franchise that is very, very simple. As we will get to when we get to the plot. Exception probably of individual movies, but then again, when you have movies, there is more of an individual plot in regards to a television series that is a sort of episodic type of series. You know, when you have an episodic sort of, it's the weekly adventures of, as Lupin the Third is, of course, the movie is going to be having a more individual plot on what it deals with. But here, there are so many individual stories. Sometimes you get a Fujiko story, sometimes you get a Goemon story, sometimes you get a Jigen, and sometimes you get a Lupin. You can get your occasional Inspector Zenigata story. But, this is a series that is near dear. I've always loved this series. I mean, for those who have never seen the series, plain simple, basic, easy way to say it is, take a third James Bond, a third of Robin Hood, and a third of, the lady guy, whose name always, it's amazing, I can never remember his name. He has a telethon, and I can't remember his name to save my life. I think he's hilarious. I can't remember his name to save my life. It's Jimmy something. Not Jimmy Stewart, but it's Jimmy something, I think. But he was with Dean Martin and everything. Jerry Lewis. See, it just pops into my head. Jerry Lewis. It's Jimmy Lewis or Jerry Lewis. See, I can't remember to say my life, but you don't know Jerry Lewis in there from the comedic aspect, at least on Lupin, and you get the gist of Lupin. But yeah, it's... I've had talks with, my friends about, which anime, and they always go, oh, Cowboy Bebop, or they'll even say Gundam, which I do agree Gundam would make a great live-action movie, but oh, Gundam, or Robotech, and I'll go Dragon Ball Z, and we saw how good that turned out, or Speed Racer, and I've always been of the opinion that the first anime movie that would probably really be successful is Lupin the Third, because it is so based in reality. And again, Lupin the Third, tied directly into what was also popular in the 70s. And, other popular movies that have been successful as far as sort of the heist movie. The group of people coming to do a big heist. Like The Italian Job. Which are good movies. And they may not have necessarily, cult followers or everything, but, a Ronin and stuff. It takes from so many different parts of sort of the noir genre, the heist genre, sort of that secret agent adventure robbery type of genre that Lupin the Third is, and it's just a fun series. I think it's really, really overlooked among the anime community. I love Lupin the Third, and it's gonna be no different with this series. I think I should probably stop rambling about my love for Lupin. The other thing here is, again, watching Lupin the Third episode, they never gotten to see. By the way, I can't wait to watch the the Nazi episode from the second season of Lupin the Third, which never got to be shown on Adult Swim. Neither did that shower scene of Fujiko in the first episode, which I thank you, Hulu, for. It all comes back to fan service, so it will always come back to fan service. Never forget that. But with that being said, let's get into our synopsis of the year very, 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 because nary is not a word, but the very first season of Lupin the Third. The story follows Lupin the Third as him and his gang, which consists of Daisuke Jigen, the sharpshooter, the swordsman Goemon Ichikawa the 13th, and the lovely, sexy, vivacious Fujiko Mai, as they pull off heists from bad people, evil people, and rich people who, quite frankly, deserve it. All while trying to escape the grasp of Inspector Zenigata. That's your plot. Told you it was simple. But with that being said, let's get into our review of Lupin the Third. With our review as we usually do. And the funny thing about this review, I might find myself, or it might seem to you as though I'm zipping through it, and it's, I'm going to try to be as descriptive as I can. A lot of the great stuff really is more in the story section here, and it's not to say that the music is bad, or the animation is bad, or the acting is bad. It's just, it's one of those things where it's good, but I don't find myself having a lot to say about it. Let's start with music, as we usually do. And let's talk about the opening and closing theme. Which, it's very much in the vein of sort of the classic superhero theme, where you just say the main character's name over and over and over again. In this case, in front of sort of psychedelic 60s music, sort of that 60s sort of pop music that you would expect of sort of a spy caper and stuff like that. You know, Lupin, 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 Lupin the Third. Some episodes sort of had to where it was just a theme, and then there were others where it was, you know, Lupin, you know, introducing himself and the rest of the gang. It was good. It's cool. It's definitely something that fits Lupin the Third. And it's definitely something of its era. And I think that's something I'll say a lot about with music and animation and some of the other things, is that it's of its era. I don't know necessarily if that's something that would work now. Or at least to make it work, you have to sort of match that era feel, and you have to meet or I should say match that sort of nostalgic feeling. Which, by the way, I think the Loop on the Third, Woman Called Fujiko Mime series was able to do to an extent. Depending on your point of view, but that's a whole different view for a whole different day. But, you know, basically that was the theme song. It's this sort of 60s type of sort of classic sort of Japanese 60s music. I really don't know how to call it. It's sort of the type of 60s sort of pop music that came out in Japan. If you've, like, watched an old school Godzilla film or an old school 60s Japanese film, you know what type of music I'm talking about. But yeah, this definitely sort of fit that feel of it, that vibe of it, as far as the melody is concerned. And they just said Loop on the Third's name over and over. Well, in the case, the way the Japanese would go, Rupon the Third, which comes very, very close to saying RuPaul, which scares me very, very much, because I don't want to follow RuPaul the Third, because the fact that that man might, or whatever that is, might be mating and multiplying and slowly taking over the earth scares me very, very much. There's a horror movie somebody needs to make. Forget zombies. I want Night of the Living RuPauls. That's a scary movie. But that's off topic. The closing theme here, again, it's another sort of 60s sort of soft rock music, and it's like watching Fujiko ride a motorcycle sort of across the land. It's a sort of classic animation technique. And again, it fits the series. I don't know if I'll be listening to any of this music anytime soon. It's fun to listen to in the series. And that goes for the same for the overall score. And there's some interesting pieces. There's some sort of classical pieces that are used. You know, but, like, the big piece, like, the main theme for Luna, Lupin, Lupin the Third, Lupin. And again, they're just saying his name over and over again. It's hilarious. But it fits the series. But the thing about it is, it's not something to where I would find myself listening to, maybe on some nostalgic kick or something like that, but it's not something where I find myself listening to this music, you know, out of the blue or any day. It's something that where it sounds good when it's with the series on. It's great as background music to the series. And it gives a certain vibe to the series, no doubt, that helps the series, but it's not something to where I could see myself listening to this music outside of the series. And that's just like the overall feeling with a lot of stuff, you know, animation-wise and everything. It would just seem weird outside this series in a different series that's not part of the Lupin franchise. Or, you know, or something like that. It's just, and the same goes for the score. To listen to it outside of listening to any other type of series would just seem wrong. Because definitely, obviously, with them saying Lupin the Third's name over and over again, that may be obvious, but even the more other scores, you know, they have this vibe to it that matches Lupin the Third and fits what the series is going for and helps with the nostalgic and the overall feeling of what Lupin the Third is. But at the same point in time, it's not something that really could be used anywhere else. I guess that makes it unique, but it's not something that necessarily feels unique. It just feels like this. It feels organic. It feels, I'm trying to look for the right word here, and I apologize. But again, it's something of that time, of that era. With that, let's move on to animation. And the overall style of Lupin the Third, it can only be described in it's the style of Monkey Punch. And if you've seen Monkey Punch's artwork, you know what his artwork looks like. It's very distinct. It's, sort of the rounding of heads, and so the round shapes that Monkey Punch and unique shapes that, you know, Monkey Punch use. He has such a distinct style that when you see it on screen, it just pops out at you. And so, to me, I love Monkey Punch's art style. It's the use of round shapes and sort of the round sort of conic heads of sort of the older gentlemen and everything, where, you know, really everything's rounded and there's sort of a almost a comedic sort of, I'm trying to think of the word, I'm trying to think of the art style, and I can't think of the art style. It's the art style that you see on the street, somebody, it starts with a C, a cartograph. I'm completely blanking on this. I apologize, folks. Somebody's probably yelling at the screen trying to correct me. I've completely blanked on it. But that sort of wacky, sort of almost cartoony sort of, you know, face paintings that you'd see on the street, people, or if you go to an amusement park, hey, let me draw you in this cartoony type of way. That sort of Monkey Punch's style, it's very distinct, it's very unique. It's definitely of that era and of Lupin the Third. It's not something I could necessarily see in a Gundam or a Robotech, you know, or any other serial. And yeah, with Gundam, they also have the unique art style. But like, for instance, there's anime where they'll have an art style that you'll see in others, and you could see it in those series as well. This is something completely unique to Monkey Punch. It's completely unique to Lupin the Third. And unless it's a series being created by Monkey Punch, to see that same art style being done by somebody else in another art would look very, very weird. This is distinct to Lupin the Third. And then you have character designs, and the character designs are wonderful. Monkey Punch did a wonderful job of plotting out these characters and them fitting all in a gang. You know, Lupin, you know, he has a bit of James Bond feel to his character design, but he also has that Jerry Lewis feel to his design. And that, I think, is a lot in the leg and the arms. Like, the body and sort of the suit and sort of the coolness of him, you know, in sort of more subtle scenes, that James Bond feel to him works so well. But the sort of the Jerry Lewis feel in some of the action scenes is just as well awesome. It leads to both, it is the comedic genius of Lupin, or that's used with Lupin. You know, Jigen, sort of that cool, sort of 60s cat with the beard and the hat and the pipe, the sharpshooter. Definitely, you know, get vibes of sort of Dirty Harry with him, and sort of other classic sort of 60s sort of American pop culture guns, you know, vigilantes. Goemon is sort of just a classic caricature. And that's the name of the thing I was looking for. It all comes back to me eventually, people. That's the art style I was thinking about. Caricature. it's amazing what comes to you. But, you know, him being really a character, sort of that classic idea of the samurai, and sort of that being that last samurai. You know, stoic and quiet and everything that you really feel in his character design is really wonderful done. And then Fujiko, it's 1960, it's very simple art, but damn, she still looks sexy. In just in one of the opening things where it's, you know, she slowly rises up her leg and there's her garter belt, and again, it comes back to garter belts, folks. I can't help myself. But, you know, slowly takes out the gun, it has the sort of lace sort of, oh, god damn, I love the 60s. I hate some of the generation aspects that are coming out, but god damn it, I love the 70s and 60s. And what they got the hell away with. but no, she is the epitome of sort of the femme fatale. And really, when you look at it from that standpoint, Fujiko really was the benchmark, really was sort of the predecessor and archetype for the sort of the classic femme fatale to be you that's used in sort of animation today. And that's not to say there weren't ones before her and ones after her, but, you know, especially when you see her in this anime, she really is sort of the prototype for what would come afterwards as far as femme fatales of being sexy and yet having a lot more, you know, character-driven story to her, you know, as Fujiko has, though we'll discuss that more in story. Special effects and backgrounds are very, very typical of, you know, what you would see of a 60s animation. And again, it is that jump in sort of detail that you saw in the 60s. Again, like I said, the influence of Sleeping Beauty is definitely felt in sort of the more attention to, you know, buildings having a bit more shading and lines to show how maybe old or new they are. Something that maybe you wouldn't feel even 5 years before that. I'm trying to remember when depending on when this came out. It was either early 60s or late 60s. But depending on when it came out, either 5 or 10 years. But, not the type of detail you'd maybe see in a Speed Racer or a Gigantor or a Astro Boy. And again, also special effects, while typical of what we'd see of anime of the 60s, it is leaps and bounds over the type of special effect work used in animation by the Japanese than it was in the 50s, again, with things like Speed Racer and Astro Boy and all of that other stuff. Which I do know, but again, I don't want to repeat myself. So it is, again, of that era. It's not something that would work now, but it is of that era, and it is a peek into history, which I like. I think that's all that can be said for animation. We're going to take a quick break, folks. I may just play one promo. And when we come back, we're going to get into acting and story.
In the decade of the 1930s, even the great city of Cleveland, Ohio, was not spared of the ravages of the Great Depression. In a time of fear and confusion, a character emerged that would entertain and inspire millions of children and adults alike. He began not as flesh and blood, but as a simple line drawing. His comic book adventures thrilled millions around the world. The magic of radio gave to his name a breathless signature and sound. Then with television came a whole new generation to idolize his exploits. In the 70s, the world believed a man could fly. In the 80s, he was reborn in the comics, and the 90s saw his death, rebirth, and marriage. In the 21st century, he returned to the big screen and saw his origin changed and retold on several occasions. Through the decades, he has gone by many names. The Man of Tomorrow. The Last Son of Krypton. The Man of Steel. His strength is incredible. His name is legendary. His battle is never ending. Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound.
My name is Michael Bailey, and I host an internet radio show called Views from the Long Box. Superman is my favorite character of all time, and in 2013, he is turning 75. Because of this, a large portion of the episodes this year will be about the Man of Steel in a series I'm calling
Superman at 75, the celebration of a legend.
I'm going to mark Superman's birthday in fine style by examining all aspects of the character's history, from the comics, to the movies, to the television series, and beyond, both alone and with the best and brightest of the podcasting world. It may not be every episode, but the bulk of Views in 2013 will be all about the Man of Steel. He is the first and greatest superhero of them all, and he deserves no less.
Superman at 75. The celebration of a legend.
A series within a series, and the biggest birthday card a fan can give his favorite hero, only at Views from the Long Box. Views from the Long Box is a Fortress of Baileytude production. New episodes drop every other Tuesday over at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com, and for this series, over at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
Ready to form Voltron!
This is a job for Superman.
Power Rangers!
Right away, Michael.
Autobots, transform!
By the power of Grayskull!
For the honor of Grayskull!
Hello. I'm the Doctor.
Charlie's Geekcast, coming January 1st, 2013, to www.charliesgeekcast.com.
And welcome back. Let's get right back into it, of course, as we said, with acting. And let's go over our cast list, and I'm saying this completely cold. I didn't practice this. God help me, God. Which makes no sense. An hour ago, I was dealing with a bunch of children. I apologize. So, I'm a little and no, I'm not actually talking about children. I'm talking about a different type of children. It's a whole crazy story. I don't want to get into it. Why am I bringing work into my work? Anyways, let's go over cast list. Nachi Nozawa as Tachiro, Nachiri Nozawa and Tachiro Hirokawa play a loop on the third. Some of the voices changed halfway through the series. Kobayashi voices Daisuke Jigen. He's really the only voice that really... Him and Fujiko are the only voices that stay the same throughout the series. Eiko Matsuyama plays Fujiko Mime. Osamu Kobayashi and Goro Naya voice Goemon Ishikawa the 13th. Norio Utsuka and Shizuki Chikashi voice Inspector Zenigata. I want to make him Italian now, apparently. But again, it's a subtitle, and again, it's one of those things where I'm watching a subtitle, and I'm judging off the emotion I hear off the voice and everything. And as far as acting is concerned, they do a wonderful job. There really isn't any antagonist to per se. Zenigata is probably the antagonist, but he's really more played for a comedic laugh. And really the best way to describe it is, if you've seen the Lupin the Third that they showed on Adult Swim, it's just as much the same here. It really is. It really is done extremely well. You can really feel the emotion, sort of organic feel, comedically, that they're playing, that the characters are doing. So it just has that great, I'm going to say it again, of the era feel. It's something distinct to Lupin the Third, the franchise, as far as the acting is concerned. And it's something distinct to that era of acting in the 60s for shows like this. And I'm not just talking the animation. I'm talking sort of the heist job, theme for the Heart of Gold, super spy type of things that you'd see in the 60s. I remember this is the same era that you would bring us things like I Spy and stuff like that. So the stuff that you see in shows like that, you definitely saw in Lupin the Third. And it had that distinct feel to the acting. You know, the actors did a great... You really believed every twist and turn that happened. And yet, they were also able to turn it around and bring it to comedy. Which I thought was very, very well done. So I very much enjoyed the acting here. Let's move on to the story. And there isn't much to talk about the first point, which is overall plot. That being said, which is... The plot is, it's the many adventures of Lupin III and his gang as they try to, you know, live life and steal things. That's the overall plot. It's an episodic series where every week it's a different story. The ongoing narrative is not, I wouldn't even say weak, but it's not, it's way, way in the back. There is a growth to the characters that you see over the series. Because you do see the beginning, the first meeting of Fujiko with Lupin. The first meeting of Goemon with Lupin. And at the same point, they don't necessarily... And this maybe goes more to point two, which is talking about the individual character development and plot points. And they don't necessarily always start out as friends and that stuff. But there is a very, very, very slow growth in this series with, you know, especially with Fujiko and Goemon eventually joining the gang. And halfway through the series, they finally become a gang. And that's when that aspect of it begins. And there's a very, very slow character growth. Probably the most of it centers around Fujiko and Lupin and their growth. And they have a very slow relationship that's weird in its own way. But that being said, it is... Every episode is a different plot. And it's like... There's the mystery aspect to it. To like... What are they trying to steal? How are they going to steal it? How are they going to get away? What fiendish plan is Lupin going to, you know, pop out of his ass? To help them get away with whatever they're trying to steal. Is he going to get double-crossed by... double-crossed by Fujiko? Again, and that whole mystery aspect to the plot also helps in the fact of... Fujiko, which side is she on? Is she with Lupin? Is she not? You know, you never really know. But like I said before, there are individual plot points. In some of the Goemon episodes, we find out a whole lot more about Goemon. Hitman Blues, which is a Fujiko, is a really excellent Fujiko episode. In the episode, basically, Fujiko and Lupin are working on stealing a microchip, but things go wrong and, Fujiko gets shot, and part of the reason it goes wrong is it turns out one of the partners of the person who has the microchip plans... is named Poon and used to be her partner. And as it gets revealed to Lupin, Fujiko's sort of dying on a table, you know, with a gunshot wound. And Lupin learns from Jigen that basically her and her partner used to be called the Golden Couple in the world of the Hitmen. Her and her partner, a former partner, Poon, who they split up 3 years ago. And there's sort of this great sort of battle of wits between Poon and Lupin and a cabin where Fujiko's dying of a gunshot wound. And yet, at the same point in time, how it ends, Fujiko still is able to be the one who influences the outcome. And, you know, it shows a strength, or her strength of character, her independence as a sort of a female character. Much deeper and much lighter sort of serious side to both Lupin and Fujiko. It is a just wonderful episode. If there is one episode I suggest you watch of this, of that first series, that's it. Because I think it really sets in stone the uniqueness of Lupin and Fujiko's relationship. Is they are two people in love, but with Fujiko and you know, the treasure she cherishes most is probably her independence. And so once she's in love, this need to stay at sort of just out of reach of Lupin. You know, And it's partly the game that they play with each other, but also that need to be with him, but not too close to him. You know? And it's just, there's such a unique relationship. And that's not to say the relationship between Goemon and Lupin and Jigen and Lupin aren't unique in their own ways. They definitely are. But they're much more simple, you know, much more easy. It's not to say they aren't deep, but they aren't, you know, astronomically deep as maybe, and with all the twists and turns in them that Lupin and Fujiko have. You know, they're partners, and there's a trust that's been built over time between Lupin and Jigen. You know, and with Lupin and Goemon, it's a sense of respect for each other's skills after trying to do battle with each other a couple of times in their first couple of meetings. The sort of type of respect that, you know, a samurai would have for another person who is able to match, you know, sort of in a way, duel with him. And so that's very easy. But again, the integrals, and especially when you think about this being a series in the 1960s, you know, just how integral and sort of deep the plot between Fujiko and Lupin is absolutely incredible. It is a real joy to watch. Then you have sort of this slapstick comedy that is, again, it's of its era, but I love it. It's purely comedy of Lupin. And a lot more of the more comedic episodes happen later on. It's sort of the different way they do things, the wackiness of Zenigata, the wackiness of their plans and their inventions and their ways they're going to get out away with the treasure. One of my favorite examples of this is, I'm trying to remember, I'm blanking on the name of the episode, but the name of the episode, or the plot of the episode is they're on a ship, and they're trying to steal what's known as the Eye of the Nile. And they, you know, Fujiko and Lupin are trying to steal this from this basically sort of Hollywood actress who's just basically, who knows that they're there and knows exactly where they are, has basically exchanged her, this beautiful emerald, by the way, which is what the Nile, the Eye of the Nile is. And she's basically toying with them. And she knows she's trying to get it. But they finally figure out that it's in the eye of her cat. And they're able to, you know, get one up on her. And Fujiko and Lupin escape with it. And it's a really, and it really shows, there's a lot of great comedic aspects to that episode that I think best exemplifies the type of comedy that the first series has. The second series, the so-called Lupin Red Jacket series, is definitely more comedic-based, because that's more of an episodic, what's the wacky adventure between them today, than more of the character building that this series has. While it has comedic bits, it's all more in the sense of building these characters as a team. That's why you're able to have that more episodic adventure, you know, what's the heist this week feel that the second series has that everybody fell in love with. All in all, this is an anime classic, bar none. The entire Lupin the Third franchise is an anime classic. Even the recent A Woman Named Fujiko. There's a distinct feel to Lupin that is unique. The Monkey Punch is art is gorgeous and beautiful. And it's one of those things I personally enjoy watching over and over and over again, because it's so unique, and there really isn't anything that can even touch what Lupin the Third is in anime. And today, I don't think there's really anything that could touch what Lupin is on television. It's so unique. It's got the perfect amount of lightheartedness to where it, you know, you're able to get into it, but you can still take it seriously. It's a shining example of just what's great about anime and an episodic series adventure. So at the end of the day, the first season of Lupin the Third gets a 4.5 out of 5 for me. That 0.5 really comes from the fact that a lot of the stuff in it is of the era, And as nostalgic as I am for it, and old school, because old school is cool, it is of the era. So that is it for this episode. I was about to say Lupin the Third, but of Tom's Prerogative. I really flew through this episode, and I apologize. I don't know if you guys like my longer episodes or not. I mean, since I've come back, I've not had, like, the epic two-hour ones, but, you know, the past couple episodes have been about, like, an hour and a half. This is probably not going to be even an hour. I don't know. Unless I start talking for 20 minutes on how you can reach the show, I don't think it's going to reach that. And it's not that I didn't have a lot to say about it. It's just that it was very easy to say the things that I liked about Lupin. It's just, it's a simple series, simple plot, and I just very much enjoy it. And I really hope everybody goes and checks out the first season of Lupin. It's on Hulu right now. You don't have to have, you know, right? I just got Hulu Plus. I'm still seeing commercials on my PlayStation. Though I do suggest it because there's a lot of great animes on Hulu Plus. But even with that being said, and of course, that also, it's our unique way of supporting the anime industry. But, you know, it's, you don't need to have a Plus. Account. I was trying to think of the word there. You can have just a free account on Hulu and still watch this. It's just a joy. It really is. I highly suggest anybody that wants to look at just sort of back into the history books of what anime was, this is a great peek into it. But if you have any comments that you want to leave the show about this episode, about this series, anything you want to let people know, there are several ways you can do it. You can leave us an email at absolution132@yahoo.com. You can also leave us a message on our Facebook page that you can find by liking us at the Absolution Network. But search Absolution Network on Facebook, like us, leave us a comment. We'll, and again, any comment left, we'll be sure to read on the show, unless you don't want us to. And you can always leave a comment on the website itself that you can find at www.an.132productions.com. And of course, while you're there, check out all the other 132 production sites, which includes the Otaku Momentum right here on the Absolution Network, Shaft Plus, which is coming back soon, which has Gene and Chris, and of course Chris's Random Redbox Reviews that you can find at www.randomredboxreviews.com. Of course, Shaft Plus, which has a couple of preview episodes up there, you can find at www.shaftplus, as in the word plus, .com, so shaftplus.com. And of course, my other shows, which include Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast, you can find that at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And of course, the Comic Book Crazy podcasting network that has Heckcast, Comic Book Crazy, the Comic Book Pitch, among others. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And of course, while you're there, remember to check out all our friends that you can find on the sidebar of the site, Michael Bailey and his variety of podcasts, which of course includes Views from the Long Box, Brad Douglas' Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Syker's Major Spoilers Podcast, and Scott Gardner's Two True Freaks, among others. And that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. And I almost said Lupin the Third again. But of Tom's Prerogative. Next week, well, we're not done with Lupin the Third quite yet. But while we're not going to go and cover the second series, or at least the first season of the second series, we are going to cover a movie. A classic movie. Where the story ideas and story characters of Monkey Punch meet the gorgeous and beautiful artwork of Hayao Miyazaki. I am, of course, talking about Lupin the Third, Castle, Kalistrotto, whose name I probably just screwed the hell up and have tons of people screaming at their computer screens or iPods or however you may listen to this series. But that's next week. yeah, we're going to keep on the loop on the third goodness. But until next time, my Toonami generation, stay golden.
What should I be doing?
Find cover. It's going to get too dangerous for you in here.
Desert. Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.